Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend show. Also your hosts throughout the week on our website and podcast, kereport.com or Corlin Economics Report if you're searching us in your podcast listener. Now, I know, we turned the corner, Labor Day's behind us. Well, I think a lot of people thought that markets would get a whole lot more interesting after Labor Day. Unfortunately, we still have a lot of sectors. One could argue almost every sector still more or less stuck within their ranges. But again, this week, shortened trading week. One thing we did a lot this week was get a lot of company updates because there was a lot of news that was announced coming out of Labor Day. Plus, we also talked to a lot of analysts and got their insights on what they use in terms of different metrics, different technicals to guide their trading approach. That's where we're going to start off in this show with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago and editor of the Lion Share. Now, Dana, we have you on about every 2 weeks, but what we usually talk about, and even what you outline in all our interviews, is the internal models that you use. Now, again, these are models that you and, well, your group has built, and it comes down to the fact that you don't put emotions in these models. You simply read the models and let them dictate where the markets could be going and different sectors. Can you give us a little bit more information on the types of models that you use and some of the key features within those, please?
Yeah, sure, Corey. So I think the first point is that the importance of the reliance on data, you know, objective quantitative data or quantitative like decision making points, as opposed to, you know, subjectivity or narratives or your gut, for example. So the more data based and quantitative and objective your system can be, the more reliable it is and the more confidence you can have in it. So when people ask me what do I read and what do I base my, you know, our investment outlook on, we don't read anything except data. You know, the data is not going to be subject to, you know, a bias or subject to any sort of a narrative. It's going to be flat out, you know, data and objective. And it's how you put that data together, obviously, that, you know, it determines the effectiveness of your model. So the data that we've pretty much whittled down over the decades as having the most effectiveness and the most importance in the way that we manage money, which is first and foremost, we're equity managers. So we're managing equities. We're first and foremost stock managers. So we do manage and trade other markets, on pretty much any markets, but that's based more on technicals and sometimes on relative strength based models. But when it comes to the equity market, what we have found to be the most useful in terms of guiding our direction and our allocation is breadth. You know, what is the level of participation in a rally, for example? Studies have shown that 70% to 80% of the determinant of the direction of a particular stock is based on the direction of the overall market. So it doesn't matter how good or poor a company can be. If you're trying to buck the trend of the overall market, you're not going to be successful in the long run. So if we're in a raging bull market and you're trying to short, it can be a terrible company. You're probably going to lose money because the stock's probably going to go up. And same thing on the downside. If we're in a bear market, you could be buying the best company in the world. You're probably going to be losing money because of the direction of the market, the overall market. So we try to first and foremost, from a top-down basis, figure out where the overall market is heading. And we want to align our investment posture as much as possible with that. So if our model's telling us that the majority or the broad market is going up, then we can be more aggressive, and then we go to another model, a relative strength-based model, and tells that helps guide us where we want to concentrate most of our money. But if, like it's been over the last 4 or 5 months or so, and our model says that the overall market is moving down or there's substantial risk in the market, then we want to be a little bit less aggressive. And some folks may say, point to the fact that, you know, the major averages have been hitting new highs over the last several months. Well, if you look at some of the broad averages, the value line geometric, for example, it measures the median stock in the market. It's basically been going sideways for the last 6 months or so. So we don't think, you know, necessarily we're at a major top. There's going to be a huge bear market or anything, but just a time to be a little bit less aggressive, more of a trading market like we've been talking about over the last, you know, really several months. And a little bit more risk at hand, especially a seasonality here in September being a seasonally weak period of the year. And once maybe a little bit more of a washout here, then we can put in a tradable low and maybe embark on another leg up in the broader markets. But for the last several months, like we've talked about and continuing right now, we see more risk in the market here in the short term before, again, maybe that good tradable low and a sustainable breakout and up leg.
Well, Dane, I know that you're an active trader and you manage your portfolio based on the quantitative information as well as the technical analysis, but just maybe diving into it a bit more. Let's say you're going into a position in an ETF. When do you know that it's the right time to buy? What kind of indicators are you looking for technically or quantitatively? And then when do you know it's a good time to sell and or short a position?
Sure. So again, there are multi-factors that go into this. First, what is our overall risk model saying? Is it bullish? Are we on a sell signal or a buy signal? If we're on a buy signal, then we want to be buying more aggressively. Then we go to the next component, which is a relative strength model. So we don't believe in diversifying across like all sectors of the market. We believe in, which in our studies just dilutes performance. What we want to do is concentrate our portfolio in those areas of the market that are performing best. So we have a quantitative model that uses a heavy component of or takes a heavy input from risk-adjusted return into the ranking. So we want to find areas of the market that are performing very well on a risk-adjusted basis. That's how we pick out, that's how we typically select or get a heads up on some of the better performing sectors in the market that might be viable targets for us. From there, we go to kind of pinpointing, you know, entry points and exit points. From that point, we go to charts, and we like to buy high relative strength areas, areas that overall are performing the best, that are in uptrends. We like to buy them in pullbacks, so we like to buy them at good risk reward entry points. And again, from that point standpoint, we use a lot of charting techniques, different Fibonacci techniques for buying, kind of buying mean reversion, buying at mean reversion spots in trending markets. So I guess you would call it a trending philosophy, but in terms of finding entry and exit points, we like to use like mean reversion tactics. And again, a lot of that is Fibonacci based. We use some moving averages to determine, you know, the exact entry and exit points. But as far as getting out, and the same thing would apply for shorts. So we're looking for relative laggards, areas that are underperforming the market, and the same thing, areas that are in downtrends. We want to sell those or short those into bounces to resistance. And again, that's based on the basically on the charts as far as the exact entry or short entry points. And when we decide to get out of a stock, it's either because other areas of the market have surpassed it in relative strength and we want to kind of exchange from one area to another, or perhaps it's a flat out breakdown on the charts and we want to look for an area to sell into resistance because, you know, the position's just not working for us anymore.
All right, Dana, a lot of information there. I appreciate you breaking down those models. One other thing that I should mention is over at Dana's website, the Lion's Share, he was running a 25% off special. It ended last weekend, but he said that he would still honor that for any of our listeners. So if you guys want to take advantage of that special, all you have to do is email me, fleck@kereport.com, put Dana Lyons in the subject line. I'll forward it on to Dana, and he will still honor that discount for you. Dana, let's move over to the markets now. U.S. equity markets had a bit of a bad week. They're down, still not down a percent, a full percent, but it was kind of day after day of selling that came into the markets. Again, not a waterfall decline by any means, and not even down to that 50-day moving average that seems to be support over the last 6+ months, but something that we have talked about. Look, breadth continues to be very weak in these markets, but yet the markets still tend to have this buy the dip mentality. What's your takeaway? What's your updated thoughts on these markets, please?
Yeah, you know what? Oh, it's kind of like a broken record. We've been talking about it for several months, but we've had this directionless trade. We've been in a what we call a two-way market or a trading range market. So basically, we've been just trading the market, you know, buying the dips, but also selling the rips, not getting too aggressive, not expecting home runs, not expecting, you know, sustainable breakouts or breakdowns. But, you know, when things pull back to a decent entry point, put your money to work, but don't be afraid to take profits into a bounce. So that's basically how it's been in the equity market as well as most markets. And I think one major area of concern, as I alluded to our reliance on breadth earlier, is that at many of the or at the series of new highs and major averages over the last several months, we've seen pretty much a non-confirmation in terms of breadth. So we haven't seen, you know, the broad market of stocks really keep up at hitting new highs along with the major averages. So that typically is a precursor to more of a correction or a sell-off and some sort of at least digestive action like we've seen prior to, you know, more of a sustainable bottom and a sustainable up move. So I think that's still underway. I think we get more of that corrective action and add to the mix in addition to that, in addition to some complacent investor sentiment, add to the fact that we're in the most negative seasonal period of the year in September for stocks. This is the we're right in the meat of the most negative seasonal period. So that is another kind of a slight headwind. It's never the most important factor for us, but it certainly is a factor, especially right now when it is the most, you know, consistently negative portion of the year. So that's one more reason just to be a little bit more cautious here over the next several weeks or month or so, and expect more downside action. So we'd love to see some kind of a washout here over the next several weeks or month, and would not be surprised to put in some kind of a nice tradable bottom that would be, you know, probably the springboard for another move to new highs and more of a sustainable up move, at least in the intermediate term.
Well, Dana, off mic, you'd mentioned that you have two counter trend trades on right now in both bonds and oil. So just walk us through those trades and what you're looking at in both of those.
Yeah, sure. So we bought bonds, long-term. We are bearish on bonds. We think interest rates go up for many years or decades even. But in the short term, you know, nothing goes in a straight line. So we've been bullish in the short term on bonds. And we think we're getting another decent entry point right now in the long bond, specifically TLT. So if you're looking at TLT on the chart, we bought it today down in the 148 and change level around 148.30 or 50. We think there's upside from there if it can hold that spot, maybe up towards 157 and change. If you're looking on the yields, specifically on the 30-year yield, we're seeing perhaps some resistance around, call it 194 or so, and that opens up downside if it does. If it's unable to get above there, then we could see downside at least to the recent lows in July around 178, and then potentially down around 167 or so before, you know, we perhaps embark on another up move in yields, which again we think is going to happen over the long term. But you know, like I said, nothing goes in a straight line. So right here we think we have an opportunity from a decent risk reward standpoint buying bonds.
What about the oil trade too, that counter trend oil trade? Because oil, well, it's been moving higher, but we did have some weakness here, right? So what is your outlook for oil?
Yeah, so it's kind of the opposite. So we've been in a decent uptrend in crude oil ever since the craziness of last March and April 2020. Been in a nice uptrend. So looking at, we track one index that we track is the S&P GSCI crude oil index, which has been a good technical basis, a good index to trade. So did rally from last year's lows up to test those highs from 2018, basically the highs of over the last 6 years or so. Pulled back from there over the last couple months or so, rallying back, trading right at resistance right now. So on that index is about 380. We think there's downside to about 330 to 340. So not maybe a home run, but I think right now it's challenged from a technical standpoint, and we have maybe about 15% or so to the downside immediately. So we are shorting crude oil right here. Like I said, we're in the trading range, so we're not looking for a lot of home runs, but there are opportunities out there in equity market as well as other financial markets that are in the same type of a trading range. So when you get that opportunity, pull the trigger and hope for, you know, some small wins, some nickel and dimes, and over the long, you know, over a longer directionless trading range, if you can pick up some small wins here and there, then you're ahead of the game, as opposed to just basically watching your money run in place and not working for you. So we're happy to try to pick up some wins here and there, not go for home runs, but put ourselves in position to eventually, once we do get that, you know, what could be a major low or major high, then get more aggressive in putting our money to work, looking for those home runs. But right now, again, nickel and diming, and a couple of those trades that might work right now for us would be long bonds and short oil.
Well, Dana, another one, you said you were nickel and diming and just more of a short-term trade is the small cap growth, you know, and how that compares to just the small caps in general. You see a divergence there. So maybe talk to us about that setup.
Yeah, so one of those, another one of those markets that's been in a trading range for a while, a well-defined trading range, would be small caps, but specifically small cap growth. So if you look at this S&P 600 growth index, the small cap growth index, it's basically been moving sideways, a very well-defined range since back in February when it first made its made this high. So if you're looking at the ETF, there's an iShares ETF based off the index. The ticker symbol is IJT. So in February, where it hit this high around 134 or so, and we've hit that almost every single month since. It's pretty good setup, and it's not an arbitrary level, that 134. If you look at the down at the bear market basically since between 2018-2020, you take a 161 extension above there, which is the obviously the key, the golden ratio in Fibonacci, it brings you right to that 134 level. So that's where right where we stopped in February. It's been bouncing off of that level ever since. Finally, a couple weeks ago, we did break out, ran up to about 137.5 or so, pulling back, testing that breakout level right now around 133, 134. So we did added some small position to start out right at that level. As we are cautious on the overall market over the next month or so, we would not be surprised to see the breakout fail here temporarily and get another pullback, maybe down towards that 131, 130 level, maybe even 129. But we'd be happy to enter add some more to that position there, as I think it's setting up for a well-defined breakout in a new up leg. And the divergence comes in with basically the Russell 2000, which has not challenged its former highs, pretty much going sideways in the middle of the range. And obviously that points to the weakness in the value sector, the value segment of the small cap area, which is the laggard, has been pulling down the overall small cap sector. So as far as a technical setup, that growth area looks best to us and looks like it's, if not ready to go, at least at a point where you can start dipping your toes in right here.
So Dana, big picture here, it sounds like, look, we look at the U.S. equity markets, we might see some weakness there. Outside of that small cap growth, it's all playing into kind of the same set. So bonds also might get a bit of a bounce if we do see that weakness in the U.S. markets. This to me maybe speaks to a more defensive trade coming back into the market. Do you think this is a fair broad comment to ask? And if you do see kind of a defensive trade, where does that money flow outside of bonds? Do you see any other opportunities in some of these so-called safer assets?
I think it all fits together into a perhaps a defensive mode, at least over the next month or so, which would coincide with what our risk model is telling us. It would coincide with negative seasonality. It would coincide with, you know, the bullish short-term setup in bonds, like you mentioned, and some of the resistance still out there, and not only in equity land, but crude oil, like we mentioned, cryptocurrencies have resistance above, although they have pulled back into potentially some short-term support areas. But it does speak to at least some caution, some elevated risk conditions here in the short term. So where does money go? Maybe into bonds, maybe on the short side of the market. So we do have hedges on right now in our equity portfolio. Some of those areas that we've been short, some of the lagging areas of the market, including, you know, actually the broad small cap space. So we're happy to be short the broad small caps against the long position in the small cap growth. We also have a hedge on in the materials sector. As I mentioned, energy and crude oil has been lagging. That's another area for potential hedge or short. But whatever it is, I think the main point right now is just keep your exposure low, keep your net exposure low, raise some cash or hold a fair amount of cash, wait for a more opportune time from a risk reward standpoint for getting more aggressive, and then kind of swinging for the fences. As I mentioned, we've been hitting singles and doubles here, and I think that continues here over the next couple weeks or month before we can start trying to get more aggressive again.
Well, Dana, just pivoting over to the precious metals, they haven't been hitting singles or doubles. They've been getting clubbed over the head lately, but I know you trade the GLD and the SLV. Do you have any targets where you would look at, you know, getting more aggressive with those or selling into those? What are you looking at with gold and silver?
Yeah, gold and silver, same thing with the miners. We trade the ETF. So we think in the longer term, there's the next up leg to the bull market in precious metals is coming. We don't think it's here yet, though. So I think putting a lot of your money into the precious metals right now is probably kind of a waste of your money here in the short term. Maybe it, in the long term, it ends up being the right move. But in the short term, plenty of resistance on the charts, plenty of challenges here on the GLD, for example, in the up near 170, in the low 170s. Plenty of resistance there. We would not be buying again until down around the 158.5 level again, where we bought back and where things bottomed out back in March for the GLD. And as far as the SLV, the silver ETF that we trade, that 21.5 level continues to be an important support level. We saw it hold back basically a year ago, and then earlier, last month, held again. We're not extremely confident that it holds again on another test. And indeed, if it breaks, then we're looking at maybe a test of 19.5 and then below that 17.5. So we are not getting too aggressive here in the precious metals complex. And the same thing in the miners. Gold and silver miners look equally as challenged here in the short term. So we would wait for lower prices, more of a washout in the short term in the precious metals complex before we get a little bit more aggressive in that area of the market again. But again, in the longer term, it's not all bad news. I think this is part of a consolidation or digestive process after that huge bull market that we saw into the summer of last year. And once that runs its course, then I think we do see a new upleg in that complex.
Okay, but I guess in summary, gold going back to test that 158 level on GLD, which is pretty much that 1675 resistance, and silver could even go into the high teens, so still some weakness there. Dana, final question. Do you think that cryptos are taking away some of the steam from the precious metals? And on the flip side, if we do get a defensive trade that does pick up some steam, does that lead more money into the cryptos?
I have no idea. We trade the cryptos and everything else, for that matter, on its own merits. It has tended to trade as a risk asset, not necessarily as a hedge, but not at all times. Sometimes it does trade as a hedge. So in terms of what we would call intermarket analysis, does one the movement of one asset necessarily play into the a similar or opposite movement in another market? We don't rely on that. You know, we trade each market on its own merits. Sometimes, like we spoke about off mic, and you were mentioning that sometimes the dollar gold relationship is perfectly inversely correlated. Sometimes they trade together, and we don't need to rely on, you know, one thing making sense in terms of the move in another asset. So we'll rely on basically the technicals in cryptocurrencies to trade those. So right now they're in a trading range like most assets are and have been. We're happy to buy the dips right now in something like Ethereum or Bitcoin on Ethereum. The next level would be looking to buy is not that far away, down closer to 3,100, 3,150 perhaps on Ethereum as far as Bitcoin is concerned. We did buy a little bit on the dip this past week, around that 45, 46,000 level. If that doesn't hold, then we could be down around 41,000 perhaps. But it's like anything else. We'll be trading those markets just like the equity markets as long as we're in this trading type of an environment and not expecting, you know, breakouts to be sustained or breakdowns to be, you know, the end of the world. So we're looking to trade them just like the equities and go for singles and doubles.
All right, Dana, always interesting comments, buddy. And I have to say, look, your approach, your models have been pretty much spot on for at least the last year, especially post-election when a lot of people were pointing to a top in markets. And again, that just hasn't come. These markets keep on moving higher, but you are starting to see a bit of weakness. And even your models are saying that there could be some weakness here. But again, big picture thoughts and some of those short-term trading strategies that I think should be noted. Again, if you want that special 25% discount to the lion's share, all you have to do is email me, fleck@kereport.com, and I will put you in touch with Dana. Dana, thanks for your time this weekend. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend, buddy.
Thanks, Corey. Always a pleasure.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.